I'll try and address your last point, which was about how would we respond to people who say that we shouldn't go to the moon, essentially, to mine resources. And I think that's a great question, just because this audience is obviously very focused on that one goal. And I think it emphasises the importance of things like Moon Village Association to try and take all points in view and work towards a common goal, addressing all stakeholders, not just the nerds in the room who love space, essentially.
One of the lovely case studies or just examples that I like to bring up in terms of discussing, you could say the exploitation of planetary resources, is looking at Antarctica. So Antarctica is not owned by any one country. It's instead a designated area of land that is inhabited by a series of research stations from all over the world. So it's a good example to illustrate how if we were to set up a base on Mars, it wouldn't be owned by any one group or conglomerate. It would be sort of divided dependent on who would set up that base, and there would be national research labs as a scientific outpost. But then on top of that, Antarctica actually has massive kilometre-thick seams of coal. So there is a massive amount of interest from mining groups all over the world who keep pushing, saying, oh, can I just have a little bit? It won't do anything. And then, oh, can I have just have a little bit more? So it's a good live case study to look at how the communication between different countries, between industry, government, special interest groups, would interact, or how they are interacting with Antarctica. And then you can extrapolate that and look at, okay, if we were to take this and look at the moon or asteroids and comets as other planetary resources, how could we intervene? What protocols should we establish? How can we sort of guide that discussion and say, okay, this didn't work or this did work in Antarctica. Let's carry that on over.
Great, thanks. Can I just quickly make a response to that? We should also keep in mind that under the Antarctic Treaty, there's a ban on mining for 50 years, if not longer. And Australia was really instrumental, along with France, in leading the world towards making that decision. So it's not impossible for us to actually do the same on the moon. And I'd also like to say, I love space too, and that's why I want to protect it. So I think we shouldn't say that only the space geeks who want to mine the, you know, resources love space. There are many different ways to respond to space and to express our love for it.
Yep. Just a final point about that is that the framework for the Moon Treaty was intended to be an interim solution. So given that Australia has now, at least within the agency, has indicated interest in continuing with this Moon Treaty, they're actually actively working on basically outlining the details in how you can economically use the moon and what are you allowed to do. So it's intended to be a interim thing that is changed in the future, and much more likely than not for economic development rather than against.
I just would like to add to that, if that's okay. In terms of the Moon Treaty, we're still looking at it. Actually, one of the conclusions of the last meeting with the Hague International Working Group was that, and this was a recommendation from the UN, which is the Moon Treaty is actually really good. There's just a couple of parts that need to be defined better and constrained better in how this should be approached and for how long and how big and so on. So the Moon Treaty is still inside to just still be used and just modified a bit. Now the next part is, we're not really thinking or planning to go to the moon and do and create some massive extraction operations. No, actually, if we think about it realistically, even though there's resources on the moon, it's in low concentrations. And a lot of these resources, like the water, comes from comet impact and asteroid impact. So in reality, what we are planning is to go to the moon, test the technology, and yeah, have some first fuel stations for pretty much travel, space travel, but the real future space mines will be asteroids. and asteroids that keep impacting with planets and moons and so on. And for instance, the asteroid belt just after Mars is extremely rich in resources, and we're going to find anything from water, organics, metals, and so on. So the moon will be just a first step in testing our technology, but we are not really intending to have large operations, for instance.
Thank you, guys. I just want to make a quick point myself. I mean, what we're hearing here is that we have to mine with principles. And I think Giuseppe this morning, when he gave his presentation, obviously he said that principles was kind of integral to the future of any planning of humans and on the moon. So here on Earth, you know, when we look at mining, we obviously discuss a lot now mining with principles, and we look at risk factors in mining here on Earth. And the number one risk factor for 2019 is the social license to operate. And obviously, intertwined with that is sort of how we environmentally manage our mine sites and look at their impacts and how we manage that waste material. So given that that's at the forefront of thoughts here on Earth, that's definitely something that's going to translate into any progress that we make outside of the Earth, on the moon and beyond. So I think also thinking about Carlos's new code, the JORC code for the moon, should we say, I mean, I very much expect a lot of environmental factors to be considered in this code that you'll be discussing with others.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be taken into account social, environmental, and principles and so on. And as I was saying just before, we're in space, we're going to be developing completely new technology, completely new standards, and that approaches and addresses all these factors, of course.
Hi, I have a question. So let's assume that colonization will be successful and that these companies will be mining the moon. As Australians age, about half of them have chronic health concerns. What place will there be for unions and OH&S in a capitalist society that's only there to mine the resources?
One of the unique aspects about the Rover Challenge and other robotic competitions is that the reason for it is always harm reduction and harm minimization and taking humans out of harm's way. So a great example for that is in relation to mining specifically. We were actually approached by the UK Centre for Astrobiology to develop a rover for them to go into the underground salt mines where it is extremely hot, it is extremely dangerous. It's the whole focus is about taking humans out of dangerous situations. So whenever I talk about the rover to children, the first thing I say is, why do we want to use a rover in the first place? Why not send a human to Mars or to the moon? The main response they get is, oh, because you can die. That's exactly right. Humans can die. Rovers are replaceable. Rovers are expendable. You can send another one up for a couple million dollars. You can't really replace a human life. So in terms of unions, I'm sure if we do set up bases on the moon, there will be infrastructure to support human expeditions. But the main goal is always to reduce the amount that humans would have to go out onto the surface, because if there is a potential for risk, the risk will happen. I think it's Murphy's Law. If there is something that can go wrong, it will go wrong. So the entire idea is to take humans out of the risk. But if in terms of like the unions, I'm sure you guys can touch on that a little bit more.
Yeah, I'll just repeat the point, kind of, which is that the image of space mining is much different from the one you may think of when you think of traditional mining, where you have people, you know, deep underground. It's very very labor intensive, whereas for space, that's really not possible because it's just too expensive, and also, as mentioned before, the risk factor. So almost all the mining and equipment would be done autonomously. As for the human safety factor, I believe there's already very good existing protocols developed by, you know, the big space agencies when it comes to safety of the astronauts involved. So I see no reason why that cannot be similarly applied for future commercial operations.
Yeah, definitely. And I would like to second on them. And this is the main reason in iSpace we're looking on robotics and rovers, because the operations will be 100% done by rovers and autonomous systems. And maybe in the worst case, we will have people on Earth still doing and sending some commands to the rovers, but mainly will be fully autonomous. Now, in terms of the health and safety concerns, let's say within the mining industry, we know there are still some big accidents happening on Earth. For instance, there was just a big disaster in Brazil with Vale and BHP, where a tailings dam, one of the walls just collapsed. And actually, some of the surveyors or people that were on the wall were taken with them, and 80 people and so on. So actually, one of the things we're actually working in iSpace is how can we transfer our technology of the rovers to the mining industry. For instance, instead of sending surveyors to the walls or to the benches after blasting, you can actually now send fully autonomous rovers with a sampling system, sensors, and so on, and to do the jobs that should not be done by humans anymore. And that's what I mean, that now the space industry has technology that can be transferred to the mining and earth industries.
I thought that was a really nice point you made in your presentation about that, the transferable technologies and how they can improve mining on Earth. So I enjoyed that. But that actually brings me to a point. In terms of like our traditional mining companies here on Earth, our BHPs and our Rio Tintos and Newcrest and so forth, how many of those are interested in this space? Do you guys get a lot of people sort of coming to you? And you guys, on the back of your shirts, you've got Boeing written down there. So, you know, are they sort of thinking of, you know, how's their development going in terms of thinking of getting, you know, these things upscaled and onto the moon and so forth? So if you could talk about that.
In terms of an industry that is set to explode, is actually an industry that I'm really interested in is planetary mining, planetary resources, and looking at comets and asteroids as a source for minerals, rocket propellant, and just a stepping stone for further exploration. In terms of us getting approached, there is a bit of a miscommunication between academics and students and industry and government for that matter. In terms of looking at actually taking rovers and systems that are already developed and taking it to space, there is a whole system architecture and testing required that needs to be done. And in terms of like getting that progress initiated, that is the key area that needs to be focused on. One of the things that I like to look at is the NASA technology readiness level. So it's a flowchart that indicates at what stage the technology in its lifetime, and essentially when can we send it to space. And there's step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think it goes up to 7. And the critical aspect where most technology either gets a thumbs up or thumbs down, let's say to go on the Curiosity or Mars 2020 payload, is does it work on Earth? Does it work in space? And if it does, it can fly. And the inclination to always use systems that have mission heritage, or that means that they have success, is the sole reason why Mars 2020 looks exactly like Curiosity, because they know it works. So in terms of mining exploration, we don't know what works. So we don't really have any fallback to say, okay, let's send this. It's a massive area for development, and I think that's the main steps that people need to start looking at, is if we are talking about mining, robotics, we first need to look at what works, and then looking further back about in terms of getting the technology started. It may be companies, it may be, you know, student teams like us who have a cool idea. There's a lot of steps that need to be taken and considered before we start thinking about, let's send a autonomous rover that harvests silicates to the moon.
Okay, so big aerospace primes like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, they're very interested. It's part of their big plan when it comes to basically developing a space sector beyond the traditional satellite market. Now, when it comes to traditional mining companies, the story is quite different, because while mining companies, even big ones, they take on a lot of risk, what they don't like taking on is unknown technical risk. So that's where, as mentioned earlier, the technology has to be proven to a certain level so that the major mining companies could de-risk the project technically, and then they would be much more interested in basically taking on the mature technology and bring that mature technology to market.
Exactly right. So maybe I cannot mention the names, but we have actually spoken to a number of mining companies and even oil and gas companies that have approached us as well. And it really depends on their strategic long-term plan of each of the companies. But the main thing that we have heard, especially, is that, yes, they're interested in us, but mainly to find applications of space technology into their operations, because they know that we have technologies that they can be benefit from, especially to benefit production, health and safety, autonomous systems, sensing technologies, and so on. And that's one of the chats I'm having, actually, next week with one of them.
Yep, good, thank you. Do we have any more questions from the floor?
I saw some questions up at the back. The two kids. Did you have a question?
Oh, goodness me, that's my son.
When's the next time you think humans might go on the moon?
Good question. I like this question. I'd say between 2025 and 2030. So, you know, 2028 or so, that's when.
That's right. So far, all the efforts have been pretty much pointed towards rovers and autonomous systems. In terms of when humans are going next, that's a good approach. Now, I was just reading in the news today that SpaceX is launching, I think tomorrow, their Crew Dragon, which is they're going to be the first private company to send humans to space. So, and this is the beauty of private companies, right? That in comparison to the state space agencies, we kind of like to fail fast and therefore learn fast and then succeed faster. And that at the same time, besides bringing technology and success stories faster, we will be seeing things like sending people to the moon or Mars way faster than we thought.
Okay, thank you, Cohen. So I just want to thank the panel again, if everyone can give them a round of applause.